This is IA Forward, your playbook for success as an independent insurance agent. Here to help you knock it out of the ballpark are your hosts, Shane Tatum and Tanya Lead.
Welcome to IA Forward. Shane, today let's talk about expectations.
They're important. We have high expectations, low expectations. You're probably going down this path with our clients, but managing expectations can also go life and well beyond the office as well.
We could always start out with the cute boy signature phrase of better living through lower expectations.
It can be a single book phrase, something. There's a whole thing with that statement. I struggle with it from time to time because I raise my children. If you set the bar high, they will achieve the bar. If you set the bar low, they will still just achieve the bar. And so there's this conflict in where do we set the bar? It's things that you can control versus things you can't control. I control my kids while they're in my house. And so you can set the bar high. You can set this expectation level to be a stretch goal. What was amazing about Daniel's statement about better living through lower expectation, it was more of this outward expectation of people. If we expect people that we have zero control over, if we lower that expectation to not expect more from them, then it just helps us know how to approach the situation.
Absolutely, 100%. I was reading a statement this morning on social media from an agent that was talking about how they had a client call in that they were on a trip and needed a copy of their auto insurance card. And the CSR in their office pulled it up and said, "We haven't received a payment for you since August of 2 years ago. We don't have your car insurance." They said, "Oh, that was when I bought my house. I thought that was included in my insurance payment on my mortgage. I thought it was all together."
Expectations about client ignorance. That is a great example of what we would never think in the insurance business and maybe in society. All of a sudden you buy a house, you're educated enough to afford to buy a house, and you assume that your auto insurance payment is now a part of your mortgage payment. That in and of itself just shows some financial illiteracy. We've got to do a better job in society of educating. We've got to do a better job of helping students as they move into the workforce. How do you help them become more financial literate and more knowledgeable about basic things in life?
The Oxford definition of ignorance is a lack of knowledge or information. There is no negative connotation to that whatsoever. It just means you don't know. When I joined the Integra organization 6 years ago, I was insurance ignorant. The only thing I had done with insurance was marketing. And that didn't make me a bad person. That didn't make me stupid. It just meant that I didn't know this industry. That's 99.9% of the country when it comes to insurance. And it's not a bad thing. It's a tremendous opportunity for us in the independent insurance channel to be that educator and be that idea of the trusted expert.
Certainly the marketplace over the last couple of years has taught us that education and creating expectations for our clients, educating our clients, is probably one of the main things that agencies need to be doing day in and day out, because there is a lot of ignorance in the consumer marketplace, in the business owner marketplace, about just what is going on within the insurance market.
Post Super Bowl social media, I always find fascinating because I love to get people's take on commercials and players and all of the things that happened. And a gentleman that I used to produce his radio show, he's a real estate agent in Northeast Louisiana, very successful. And his post was, "I'm not sure how much State Farm paid for the halftime show. It was around $30 million. But with all respect to the great people that work there, I would have preferred for them to have reduced premiums a little bit instead."
That statement shows ignorance. And it's because by not raising premiums at the same rate as some others, they've hit their surplus quite a bit. They've basically lost money for their property in their property and casualty segment. And by not raising premiums, they've essentially lowered premiums by staying at a lower increase or staying even, because the rest of the market has exploded in rate increase and even to the point of not providing capacity in the marketplace. When you think about what would be the impact of that $30 million across the number of auto insurance clients of State Farm, I don't know what the real math is, but it's probably something like $30 a year, maybe, or even less. When you don't understand the context of what you're doing and versus the reach of what you can do because of a company that size, the brand building, of course, you're going to be 100% for that. The brand building during time of struggle is running against the grain. And that's one of the things that is, okay, wow, they're winning because they won this situation. They won the Super Bowl with their incredible ad. And now everybody is repeating like a good neighbor, but they're saying it in the Arnold Schwarzenegger voice. And so that brand impact is take your $30 million and multiply it times 4 or 5. And that's probably your brand impact from that investment.
What I did love about this social media post, it had about 137 different comments following up that statement. But there was one independent agent that came in and said, just like Progressive and Allstate, State Farm agents are beholden to their company when quoting insurance rates. You were obligated to pay their rate. They're always going to try to get you to bundle, blah, blah, blah. And then they said, I would always seek out an independent agent for the best rates. Independent agents are terrific. The commercials that say you can save up to $746 on your car insurance don't tell you what their rate is being compared to. It's an old apples to oranges scenario. Let an independent agent do your shopping for the best coverage that you want. And there was a little thing that went off from there that people started saying things like, my independent agent earns every single penny of their commission. They do a great job. And I really liked seeing that what started out as a commercial commentary, that there were random people saying, yeah, the independent agent is the way to go.
Our frustration as independent agents is the result of one of our biggest strengths, and getting your head around this and understanding that on an individual basis, we have to do what this particular agent has done 30 something thousand times across the country. The problem that we have is that there isn't a singular voice. There isn't that one large brand voice, which is our strength. We talk to our carriers about, we wish you would advertise more, or we wish you would do this more for us. But what we forget in that is that we don't want them to take away our brand from us. We want it to be our brand. We want it to be our brand in our community, in our local market area. That's what it takes. It takes each agency being able and willing to go out there and communicate and educate. That's the thing that we aren't doing. It's at the core of what we do here is we share stuff. When you think about our role as a channel, as a distribution channel, every one of us ought to be willing to share in our communities and educate in our communities. And if we did that, we would have less ignorance in the marketplace, and the shoppers, the customers, they would end up with us.
When I see statements like this on social media, it does go back to expectations. This is one of those places where we can, as an independent insurance channel, set the bar at a different place, because we can actually embrace that idea of, okay, they have these marketing budgets that are over $1 billion. That's one of the reasons why what we do is better, because we're not spending that money. We're not spending those billions on marketing dollars. We are so client focused that we are choosing not to do that. We're choosing to invest our dollars into our local communities, into the philanthropic endeavors that we care about, into little league teams. So that's one of those places where we can, as marketers, show that, yeah, we really are different.
The community investment and the shop local and just the thing that we can tap into is a reach that's going to be very difficult for those big brands to ever do. They can attempt to do it through their agency force, but we have the choice value. That's the thing that's always going to give us a little bit of an edge, in my view. We have become so driven by choice as a consumer society. We want to have choice on everything. Just go into a grocery store and look at the cereal aisle or the chips aisle and just look at the choices that are there. And that is something that the captive side just can't do. They can't provide choice. We even see it being such a problem that some organizations have started trying to diversify their agency force to give them more choice. They're trying to join our channel without fully joining our channel. Now, that is a huge compliment, and it's something that we should see as one of our values and one of our biggest assets is being able to educate that consumer on the fact that we are the choice model, that we do have options for them, that it's something that we can do for them in our service to them. But you got to educate them first, because you hear terms from consumers around things like, what kind of insurance do you have? What kind of insurance do you offer? And what that person meant when he said, what kind of insurance do you offer or kind of insurance do you sell? I went immediately to lines of business like auto, home, commercial. And he was, no, what kind? And what he meant was, do you sell State Farm? Do you sell Hartford? Do you sell Travelers? Do you sell Allstate? It was like, okay, wow, that's different. I haven't actually had that question before, but what kind to that particular person was literally the brand. Your customers do not know what you're talking about when you're talking to them. So you have to change the way you talk to them when you're trying to educate them.
I always go back to Aunt Mitzi's wreck last Christmas when Aunt Mitzi had Liberty Mutual Insurance, and she called me all upset because the guy that caused the accident had this insurance company that she'd never heard of called Safeco, and it was just going to be crappy insurance. Trying to convince Aunt Mitzi that Safeco and Liberty Mutual were the same thing, were the same company, she just couldn't even wrap her head around that. This is a very educated woman with two master's degrees, but it's not her wheelhouse. And I'm like, you're going to be fine. Safeco is incredible. We work with Safeco all the time. It's one of the biggest pieces of our portfolio. It's going to be good. Don't worry about it. But she had no idea that it was the same company. And when we are talking to clients, we have to remember they have no idea. My mom used to always strive to me that she would always try to explain the law at a sixth grade level, even if she was speaking to someone that had a PhD. And that's an expectation that we need to set for ourselves, is to try to explain insurance at a sixth grade level, not talking down to our customers, but speaking at a level that they understand, because that makes them feel like an expert. And if you can make someone feel like an expert, then they're going to buy from you and they're going to stay with you.
Even the most educated individuals are not necessarily well-versed on the insurance contract, the insurance industry. We have insurance for insurance companies. It's called reinsurance. You start talking down this path of the rabbit hole, so to speak, of the insurance industry and the different areas, and you can just start throwing out terms that, if you think about it from the consumer's perspective, we sound like crazy people. Is it admitted, not E&S, surplus lines, BIPD? I mean, we just start talking crazy. It's literally another language. We get in that bubble and we assume, oh, this person has a master's degree. This person has a degree in finance. This person has whatever. And we can't do that. We can't create the expectation that others understand what we understand. Thank goodness. Because here's the awesome thing. Insurance is so complicated that even the most educated people are just not going to understand it. And the direct purchasing idea, the direct channel, I've always felt like it was going to be a channel of churn. And the reason I felt like that is because the education process just isn't there. And while there are growing and more educational websites on insurance things, The reality of it is people don't want to do that. It's not like I enjoy looking at educational things about topics that I'm never going to understand. And it's things, maybe it's historical things or training things on financial instruments. There's a difference between I want to understand how to trade commodities, even though I'm never going to trade commodities, versus I want to kill 30 minutes of my life to try to understand auto insurance in a more in-depth manner so that I can speak to my agent in a different way. People don't think like that. That's the thing that's interesting to me about the direct channel and why I've never been overly concerned about competing against the direct channel. Because the direct channel assumes that the consumer is self-taught and is learning everything they need to learn because they're just ignoring the advising part and the educational part, and there being a process for you to just go purchase. And so there's a lot of knowledge and research that has to go into the consumer side when you're going to buy direct. But what we also know is that people that do that research are ending up with an agent when it's all said and done. That's a strength for us that we need to lean into. That is something that we need to understand from the expectations of our customers and what we expect out of them. There's just this huge opportunity for us to win in the marketplace because of that.
On the flip side of that, there's a phrase that I'm sure you've heard me say before, and that is the confused mind does nothing. One of the places that the direct channel has a strength on us, and this may just be a marketing challenge, is that we as independent agents can give too much information. Where agents in the direct channel come in and say, here's how much it's going to cost, here's the coverage you're going to get. And I have seen independent agents give so much information. We can do this with this, and we can do this with this, and you can get this coverage with this carrier, you can get this coverage with this carrier. With those coverages, if you don't understand what that means, it is easier for me to go back to the State Farm agent and just say, sign me up, take my credit card, put me on automatic debit, than it is for me to wade through 8 or 10 auto quotes that you're giving me. So that's one place where, yes, we have an advantage, but it can also be a disadvantage because the confused mind does nothing and it's going to automatically go to what's easier.
When I say we're the choice model, we have to put ourselves in a little bit of a box or some parameters around what we do in that, because over informing is unnecessary. There's no reason in showing 5 quotes, 5 proposals, 10 proposals. You may get that many, maybe not in the market today. It almost helps you in our agency, not our agency network, but our retail agency. We did some adjustments to remarket thresholds back in the fall. So we're going on 6 months almost of results from changing the way that we allow account managers to enter a remarket threshold. What happened there is that, combined with the fact that there were less carriers in our portfolio that were providing new business quotes or that were open for new business or that were still taking on the same amount, that we found ourselves in this restrictive environment with a renewal where we were like, this is the best we can do. And we talked to our people about being confident in that. Your coverage is right. We have reviewed it. This is the best option for you. And changing the conversation to this is the best thing for you, our retention went up, not down. That says a lot to what you're talking about. We didn't go out there with 5 and 6 proposals. We went out there with, in some cases, 1. And we basically said, look, you are where you need to be. And the consumer said, okay.
What expectations should we have of our clients?
We can expect of our clients and train our clients somewhat that we are not to be abused. Our staff is not to be abused verbally. This is a big one for me. We've fired customers, so to speak, that were inappropriate, were using language at our account managers that were just in our terms of culture. It's okay to expect your clients to understand your culture and understand that my employee, I need them to stay here and I need them to continue working. And you're one client. And if you're that one client that's just going to go off on people all the time, I don't have time for you. And this is not the place for you. So I have a high expectation that people remain professional. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to be frustrated. But I also think that the minute that customer crosses the line, then that's not acceptable. We push our people to make it personal. That's one of our core values. So try to put ourselves in their shoes and understand how they're feeling and be empathetic towards that. But at the same time, making sure that customer doesn't cross the line. Because if that customer starts crossing the line and just reaches a whole new level of just as being ugly or mean or attack oriented, then we have no place for that. That's just not acceptable. The other thing is that we can have an expectation, and this sounds so simple, but I'm not a big chaser of cancellation notices or babysitting customers on a billing basis. There should be an expectation that people pay their bills. Make them do EFT, make them do recurring credit card, make them do something that keeps their lack of organization. Doesn't mean they're a bad person, but there's a lot of unorganized people out there that are just dysfunctional bill payers. So just eliminate that. And I'm just a big advocate of getting out of the billing maintenance or billing babysitting business. That's just one of my pet peeves.
I never even knew there was another option. From the time I started paying my own insurance when I was 19 years old, I was never given an option to do anything but EFT or have a credit card on file. And so when I came to work in the insurance business and I found out there were people that were still actually paying with a check or online with a credit card or whatever, no one ever gave me that option. And I didn't question it.
If you present that as your option, if they're a standard preferred customer, they're more than likely going to accept that option. Oh, okay, this is how you do it. Yes, there's probably people who maybe don't want to do that for various reasons, but at this day and time, it's not security. More than likely, there's an option with the insurance carrier to either do credit card if they don't want their bank account on file, but it's definitely not a security issue today like it might have been 10 years ago.
What expectations should we share with clients that they can have of us?
That we're going to respond to you, that we're going to answer our phones, that we're going to answer our emails, but we're going to do that during business hours. That doesn't mean that we're available 24 hours a day on a phone basis. Look, we're a small business in your community, but we're going to get back to you. And it's so amazing to me how much business there is to be earned in a marketplace today by simply returning people's calls. Your actions there can say a ton of things. And if you just get back to people, you are probably going to create an expectation that you are responsive. And we confuse responsiveness to, I have to be available to them at 10 o'clock at night. And that's not what responsiveness means. My statement to the world of insurance agencies, independent agencies out there, is get back to them on a timely basis, regardless of what the rate looks like. And you may surprise yourself. We have so many customers that choose us simply because we respond to them, regardless of what the rate looks like.
How do you do that with producers who are Gen Zs and some of our younger millennials who are not comfortable on the phone?
You got to practice and you got to get them comfortable on the phone. There's no easy answer to this. You've got to give them the tools that allow them to be efficient with technology. Yes, be able to text out the proposal, email the proposal, but then you want to train them and teach them how to do it verbally. That's a big deal. That when you ignore that and when you don't teach them that, you assume that they have those skills because they were raised a certain way. And this is the big one, the aha for me many years ago now, was this realization that not everyone was raised the way I was raised. Generationally, as an Xer, was just different. We did a lot of talking on the phone. We didn't have FaceTime. My wife and I dated in college. We say it all the time. Video calls, FaceTime would have been an incredible tool for us. When we were at two different colleges in two different states and dating, we had to talk on the phone. We had that experience coming up. and being raised. And our Gen Zs and some of our millennials did not have that experience. That's a huge thing to understand as an agency owner, and understand that it's probably going to fall back to you and your managers and your people to teach those producers and account managers in the next generation how to be verbal communicators.
To me, the reason it's so important is it is much harder for a potential client to say no to you talking to them than it is for them to say no in a text.
Sure. Every time. It's easy to call in sick on a text. It's easy to do anything on a text because there's zero confrontation. But a face-to-face or a phone, a verbal conversation is just different. It's just a different process. And they may not answer the phone, but you got to be able to try. Hey, left you a message. Here's the proposal. You can follow up with the email or the text of the proposal. But I'm just a big advocate of getting on the phone still and having that conversation. There is still the sales process that should go on.
The fact that if I wanted a popsicle after school, that I had to call my mom's office, speak to the receptionist, ask to speak to her, stay on hold. When she would finally get on the phone, I would ask for a popsicle. We did that. Did you have to do that?
Yeah. You had to go through and get to the parent, and you would ask that question, can I have a snack? It was absolutely a thing. And so what you didn't realize is that you were training to be a better verbal communicator. You were training since the age of 8 or 10 or whatever, and that just doesn't exist today. And so we have to do that for them. We have to take that place of parenting's the wrong word, but we have to take that leadership place of guiding these individuals coming into the industry on how to do this and why it's important that they do this.
I'm going to leave us today with this quote from Michael Jordan. If you accept the expectations of others, especially negative ones, then you will never change the outcome.
Attitude's a choice. Make a great one.
Bye, y'all.
Ready to get the ball rolling with your independent agency? Learn more at IntegraAgent.com. That's IntegraAgent.com. Thank you for joining us on IA Forward. Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now, or learn more at IAForward.com.